To another episode of Arcana Archives. Today we'd like to welcome a guest I'm very batty about. Her name is Kaylee, and she's going to be telling us about bats today. Kaylee, could you tell us a fun fact about yourself?
For sure. Thanks for having me, Chelsea.
Yeah.
So yes, bats, that's kind of my thing. A fun fact that isn't academic or research focused would be that I like woodworking. So I like making longboards, and I know Rogan, you make like, what is it, guitars?
Yes.
Yeah, so that's kind of a one-up on that, but yeah, longboards, that's kind of my thing.
I don't know, there's a lot of shaping and fine detail work that goes into a longboard too, so.
And they look sick.
There is, I just remember Chelsea telling me, they do, but I was like, yeah, longboards, I'm super stoked, and Chelsea was just like, oh yeah, I have a friend that makes guitars, it's like, wow, that's sick. But yeah, that's
I just think
thing.
Woodworking is awesome. Cool because I can't do it.
So anything you can't do is
yeah,
cool.
Yeah, exactly.
Low bar, but awesome.
Right? So fun fact about me, Rogan lent me a fantastic new mic. And so my audio quality is going to increase tenfold in a good way for those audiophiles out there.
Awesome. Yeah. Who don't like the constant background noise of a USB microphone.
Yeah, I think I forgot to introduce myself. So I'm Chelsea.
The host, one of the hosts of the show. No big deal.
Very good. Yeah, we've only been doing this for, what, 8 months? That's great. And I'm Rogan, and my fun fact is... Man, when was that? Sometime like a year or two after high school, Chelsea and I met a India-based band, Sky Harbor, when they came through town on like this just massive like progressive metal tour. And yeah, we have a photo with these guys, and I have a shirt that's hiding in the background.
Oh, yeah, we both have signed Sky Harbor t-shirts. It's pretty sick.
Yeah,
I've never even heard of that band. It sounds very hipster.
They're really neat.
Maybe one day we'll interview them on our other podcast, Prognotes.
Ooh, yeah, I gotta...
Oh, that'd be sick. Oh, you guys actually got to meet them?
Yeah, we chatted them.
Oh, that's
with
fun.
Them for like a good 40 minutes, maybe.
Oh, dang.
Yeah.
That's actually really cool.
They were awesome
but
guys.
But it's fun. It's a fun fact. You know what? You did it. You did the fun fact well. Good job.
Well, thank you.
So there's no good way to segue into this question, so I'm just going to go for it. So my first question for you, Kaylee, is... What is the key difference to bats living in the city versus bats living in the wild? We did an episode about how light pollution affects nocturnal animals, but I was wondering if you could go more into depth about it.
Yeah, for sure. So if we're looking at bats within the city or outside of the city, so like rural or urban, there isn't really a difference between the actual bats, mainly just in the species distribution. So within Calgary and Airdrie, we have little brown bats who wind up inhabiting things like buildings and bridges and trees. And then once you get outside of the city, same thing. Little brown bats are in like trees and buildings and bridges and everything. But you also have other bats that aren't more commonly seen within the city. So in Alberta, we have 9 species of bats. And I cannot list all of them. I can list like a handful. But really, it's where they're found. So one interesting thing is that, like, in Calgary, we have little brown bats. In Edmonton, there seems to be more little brown bats and big brown bats. But then if you go to Vancouver or if you go to Ottawa, the bats that are found within cities kind of changes. And we don't really know why that is. But for some reason, there's just a different concentration of a different species of bats in all these different cities. So in general, there really isn't a change in the bats, just which ones you find.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yeah, it's strange. Like, I've never really seen a bat in Alberta. Like, I have when I've, like, gone out to the shoe swaps and they, like, fly overhead in the cabins and stuff. But Like, never in the city here or like, around around where I've traveled within Alberta.
Yeah, I was going to ask, when you were doing your research on bats this summer, how did you find them?
Yeah, so it's one of those things where, like, you know, if you just have a conversation with someone, like, the next day you wind up seeing that topic in person or you start hearing about it more. It's the same thing with finding bats in the city. There's no reason for anyone to go around thinking about bats in a city. Right? You just don't think about, why would a bat be in a city? But I can guarantee you, I can tell you a few things about bats and how to find them in the city. You will see them all over the place now that you're thinking about them. It's like they're
Tell us how,
everywhere.
I want to find some.
So one thing is like when bats come out, and this will also talk about like the light pollution that you were asking about earlier. So bats come out kind of around dusk and they kind of go back during dawn. So once the light starts getting darker, so if you live somewhere near a park, main like treed areas are really good. If you go out and you just kind of hang out by the trees, you'll see like little swooping around. And a lot of people probably associate that with birds because they're not really thinking about bats, but bats have a very different flight pattern compared to birds. It's like,
yeah,
all over the place. It's really random, kind of like butterflies. So yeah, if you go to a park, you'll see them. If you go near like water, like little swampy areas or lakes, you'll just see them swooping around. And during the day, and I'm not advocating for like, let's go mess with like, you know, bat roosts. But if you want to see them during the day, they do inhabit bridges. So underneath bridges, that was the focus of my research for finding bats. And you can go and look up in the little cracks, and every now and then you can just see a little bat hanging there, which is really cute.
I'm definitely going to keep an eye out for them now, but I will not be going out of my way to disturb them in their unnatural habitat.
But, like, even if you go for a walk and you're walking under a bridge, you can just look up and see if there's, like, any bats along the crack. Sorry for people that are scared of bats. They're everywhere. but, yeah, you can find them, for sure.
I wanted to see what they looked like, so I looked up the little brown bat, and that's actually what it's called, is the little brown bat. And I sent you guys a link in the chat, and I will also be posting this picture on our Instagram, but this bat is me.
They're so cute. Aww.
Yeah, they're absolutely adorable. And like they're so like in a lot of times you need rabies to deal with bats, right? The rabies shot. And you need nitrile gloves. And over the summer I had the opportunity to join a graduate student with their research, and they were handling all like bats and taking measurements and all that fun stuff. And the bats, their teeth are so little, and that's only for this species. But they were just like nomming on the grad student's glove, and they were just like taking bites out of it, and they were so grumpy, and it didn't do anything to the glove. It didn't pierce the glove, nothing, because they're so tiny and their teeth are such sad little nubs.
Oh my goodness.
So very cute, very little. Still don't try and get bit, but yeah.
They're really cute.
Right? And I guess with your other question about, it was light pollution that you guys were curious about, right? So for bat emergence, so when they're leaving their roost, it's all dependent on ambient light. So they're an animal, oftentimes, that's heavily preyed upon. So in Calgary, one thing that I found surprising is that magpies will eat bats.
Really?
Which is weird, right? Yeah, it's weird. So what bats will do is they'll kind of like stick their head out of their roost, and they'll do a little survey, and they'll work around, and they're like, is it dark enough? Am I safe to come out without getting eaten? And if they think it is, then they'll hop on out, they'll fly around, have their little foraging adventure. And if not, they'll crawl back in and just hide for a little bit. So that's kind of where light pollution comes into play. If it's really bright outside of their roost, then it may kind of limit the amount of time they have to come out. Or they might not come out when they normally would. So that's definitely a problem for bats, is light pollution. It affects their foraging because they're nocturnal animals, right? But if there's trees up around them and if it's dark around them, then honestly it doesn't make like a crazy difference. So yeah, there's definitely like negative impacts of light pollution on bats. But what I also want to talk about is the benefits, which is kind of weird. So a lot of bats are insectivorous, right? So they eat insects. And if you go for a little walk outside in the summer, you'll look up and you might see that there's like a horde of insects floating around a street lamp, right? That's like prime feeding ground for bats. So some bats actually use lampposts as like a little feeding ground. So if there's a bunch of insects congregated around there, they're like, ooh, that's juicy. That's feeding time. And they'll just go and eat.
Bats were like, improvise, adapt, overcome.
Exactly. That is exactly it. So there's definitely some pros and cons. Overall, yes, light pollution is definitely a con to bats. But I wanted to throw in that little pro.
I'm really glad there's a silver lining.
I was going to say, I think I watched a documentary or something where like one segment was on like bats and like where they're like in the jungle or like out of the way of like any sort of light pollution, like a lot of the times it's like dawn and dusk is feeding time because like the insects are still out and active and there's like still that little bit of light. And
but I mean, like, bats are so sensitive to light, a lot of studies even need to take into account if it's a full moon, which is weird, because like I remember reading that and being like, "Is this hokey? What's with this full moon business?" And I talked to my professor, and they're like, "Yeah, no. When there's a full moon, especially in the tropics, it's so bright that it's just not safe for bats to come out. It's like they're coming out like sometime anything can see them. So during a full moon, oftentimes they can't come out because it's just so bright. Less so where we are, because." You know, we don't have those crazy cool moons, but in the tropics.
That's crazy.
All right, I guess.
Yeah, no, I thought that was cool.
I guess on to our next question. So why do we often hear about bats catching more diseases that are transmissible to humans than other mammals?
Oh my gosh, I love this. This is like a whole entire thing in its own, honestly. So there's a few things that we need to look at while delving into this topic. There's the physiology of bats on an individual level. Like, what is it about those little critters that just makes them so prone to host such scary diseases? And then after that, there's the species level, right? How they live amongst each other and how that can kind of harbor diseases. And then there's, like, the fat part that we really care about, which is zoonotic diseases and how those are transmitted to us. So, like, bat-human interaction. So, to kind of dissect this, we'll look at the bat level first. So, there's two hypotheses that are kind of going around right now. And it's worth noting that we don't actually 100% understand why. So, this is a very good question because there's a lot of research going into it right now. But the two hypotheses right now are that they kill the virus, so like their metabolisms are just too strong for the virus to actually live within the bat. And then the other hypothesis is that they just have a really high tolerance to being able to host a virus. So I won't get into like the itty gritty details for sure, but like I'll go over it a little bit. So I'm sure a lot of people know that, you know, bats are special and that they are the only flying mammal. Fun, right? That's like,
I actually
why
didn't
is
know
that?
That.
And it, well, there we go. There's one of your fun bat facts.
I'm batty about it.
I'll throw a million at you. Oh, and I'm sure that's not going to be the last time. Guaranteed. But one of the things that makes it so weird that bats fly is that you need a lot of energy to be able to do that. Like, if we were imagining if we were able to fly, the amount of energy we'd need to be able to support that weight and go, like, significant distances.
It would be crazy.
It's crazy. Yeah, it's a lot. I mean, there's some bats that wind up eating, I think it's 1,200 calories worth
of
insects in an hour.
Holy, they're so small.
To be able to maintain that. They're teensy little nubs. Yeah, it's crazy. So, to be able to maintain this flight, really high metabolism, and they generate a lot of heat. Bats can get up to like 39 degrees Celsius, 40
Whoa.
Degrees Celsius. And now if you compare that to a human, if we get up to 40 degrees Celsius,
yeah,
that's
like hello 911.
Exactly, that's really dangerous. And that is like exactly what could be at play when it comes to these viruses. So these viruses could get inside of these bats, but then bats just go on their nightly adventure. They get up to like 39 degrees Celsius. They're doing fine. They're fine. But the virus, not doing so hot. It's dying, right? But the thing about that is it kills a lot of the virus, but then we get this little super virus that's able to withstand 40 degrees Celsius. And that's not great when you look at that inhabiting a person. So we increase our body temperature and our immune response to be able to kill these viruses. But that virus that infects us now can withstand 40 degrees Celsius, which is deadly to us. So really, we wind up getting up to a temperature that like is lethal to us, but the virus can withstand. So that's one of the hypotheses.
That explains a lot.
Holy.
It does, right? And I mean, there's a few gray areas for sure, but that's for the longest time, that's been a focus. And with COVID, there's been a lot of research going into to bats and their immune systems. But on the other side, so that's been like the main hypothesis. But another one is the fact that bats have an increased viral tolerance. So they're just really good at handling having a virus in their system. And there's a lot of mechanisms at play for that one. Basically, everything about their immune response is just kind of like better than people. So that also explains why they can be a host to a virus for so long. But if you combine those two, then that's really a problem when it comes to being transmitted to people. And the way that transmission occurs is bats live in like huge colonies with their species, with other species of up to 200,000 bats, really close and cluttered together. So it's tons of bats and tons of opportunities for that virus to spread to one another and then to mutate more and then to get stronger. And then the last factor, which you were asking about with human diseases, is humans coming into contact with bats. So over the last, 50 years, there's been a lot more urbanization, a lot more agriculture, going into bats' habitats, tearing down trees and like making farms, especially pig farms in like Malaysia. And that's just really increasing the rate of human bat interaction. So the bats have these diseases that they can withstand, but then we start interacting with them and that's where things start going badly.
Is it dangerous?
So there's a lot of
play. Is it dangerous to work with them?
I mean, I'd definitely say if you were to work with bats, have a rabies shot. I wouldn't say it's any more dangerous around here than other animals. There's definitely a stronger perception of bats being scary with their diseases. And in some instances, it's justified. Like in the tropics, there's such high biodiversity there that there's just way more breeding grounds for diseases. But in general, so long as you're following proper safety precautions, I don't think there's really anything to be worried about. I mean, right now, there's so many bat studies associated with COVID, because one of the theories on COVID is that it originated from bats. And that hasn't been confirmed or disproven, but it is a good theory. But I mean, a lot of researchers right now are working with bats because of COVID. So I'd say it's not dangerous so long as you're
well, that's being good. I'm glad that you weren't in like a super risky position all summer.
No, yeah. Yeah, just rolling the dice. What happens today? Yeah, no. That's good.
You touched on it a little bit, but like bats flight. I know like birds, the reason, like one of the main reasons that they can actually lift off the ground is because they have the hollow bones and are just so light. Yeah. But like bats, they don't have that, do they? Is it just like wingspan to body size and or like because they're expending that extra energy or something they can lift off the ground?
So yeah, they don't have the hollow bones. So that is different from birds. And their mechanism for flight is just very different compared to, like, they have little skin flaps, right? Like, that's a little weird. But as opposed to how, like, they can do it compared to birds, I'd say they're, so the way they eat, they're constantly eating. Like when they're in the air, they're just all over the place consuming insects if they're insectivorous. And birds, it's just not as hard for them because of their structure. So bats kind of make up for it because of the amount that they constantly eat. As for structure, I'm honestly not sure what the difference is for bats and how they can do it. All I know is that metabolically, they're really good at keeping up with the energy expenditure that they have. But structure, yeah, I don't know. That is a good question.
Because I do know that like some of the largest wingspans are bats compared to like body size. So like that might have a factor.
Their biggest wingspan, and they do have a big wingspan. Yeah, for sure. Like they can just wrap their entire bodies up in their wingspan. Biggest wingspan of a bat is about 5.5 feet.
Holy guacamole.
One species. Yeah.
Is that the
huge
giant golden crowned flying fox?
It is the flying fox. Yep.
I will post a picture of a human holding one of these. They're huge.
Yeah, for reference, right? They're gigantic.
Okay. Well, I guess next question, and this is a very important one, very serious.
Let's do it.
Why do bats poop? Good. What is the reason bat guano is so good for fertilizer? And it, like, is there a difference between like manure, guano, and poop?
Yeah, for sure. So when it comes to having a good fertilizer, it's all about the concentrations of nitrogen, phosphorus, and another one that starts with a P that I forget. Potassium. Yes, potassium. And all three of those nutrients have a different purpose when it comes to like helping plants grow. And for nitrogen, I think its purpose is it helps build like proteins, amino acids, DNA. So like really building that plant that comes from the nitrogen. And bat guano has like a disproportionately large concentration of nitrogen compared to manure. And that has to do with the fact that a lot of bats are insectivores, so they get a lot more nitrogen in their diet. So when they poop that out, it's got a really high concentration of nitrogen. It's like very ammonia heavy. And if you sprinkle that over top of your plants, you're getting a lot of nitrogen into your fertilizer, and therefore, yay, your plants get to grow super big. So that's what's really good about guano. And when it comes to manure, manure is a general term for animal poop. And commonly it's associated with like cows, sheep, horses, that kind of thing. But it's a general term. Guano is more specific. And because of the diets of those herbivores, like sheep and horses and cows, it just doesn't have as high of a concentration of nitrogen. So it's just not as good for the plant. But guano is like a superpower fertilizer. Like that one's just crazy. Manure is fine. It's just not as high concentrated as guano.
I think we're probably going to have to restore a lot of the nitrogen in the soil of our greenhouse because our tomato plants went absolutely bat shit crazy. Ooh. Ha, see what I did there?
Oh, geez,
because
no.
We're talking about bat poop.
Chelsea.
Yeah. You can fire me. It's okay.
that was like the most fitting pun I think I've ever heard.
Thank you. I was just like storing that up here. I was ready to go. I'm very proud of it. Everybody take 1d4 psychic damage.
Okay, you're like, what is guano? It's like, oh, I'm ready to go. As soon as Kaylee's done, we're going.
Yeah. but do you know where I could get bat guano fertilizer for my greenhouse or? Is it like not?
It's so weird that I know this, but this past summer I was doing some gardening, and I just went to just some random garden store, and there was guano. So, I think you can just find it.
Sick.
But it is worth noting that guano is like an all-encompassing. So, manure is an all-encompassing term for like animal poop, and then guano consists of avian poop and bat poop. So I'm not sure if the guano in the store is like from chickens, which is a really common form of guano, mm-hmm. or like other birds, or if it's from bats. So you can get guano. I don't know if it's bat guano. And actually, guano may be a term for seabirds. I don't know if it encompasses chickens or not. But regardless, you can find guano at your local garden store.
Sweet. I'll have to get some of that.
There you go.
But also maybe put up a little bat house in your backyard, and if yes. you don't mind them taking a little nip of something from your garden every now and then.
Yeah, yeah, totally. It'll help with mosquitoes too, hey?
Entirely, yeah, for sure.
Okay, here's the question I'm really excited about. What is your coolest bat fun fact?
Oh my goodness. You know what? If it weren't for delving into the, like, the physiology of bats, I'd be all like, ooh, their immune systems are super cool. But you know what? We killed that one already, so let me see if I can give you guys another one. A few little fun facts is the highest heart rate recorded of a bat was, I believe, it was over 1,000 beats.
Holy crap! I was expecting you to say, like, 300.
Yeah, no, that's, like, around average. Like, that's pretty chill. 290. It's a good heart rate for a bat. But, yeah, highest recorded was 1,066.
Ooh.
So that's one. But let's go in a different direction. There's also the vampire bats. They can only go 2 days without eating blood. So one thing that they'll do is like they kind of work together, so they'll all kind of leave the roost and they'll go on their own little adventures trying to find some juicy blood. And then when they get back, if there's some bats that haven't eaten or they were unable to get blood that night, they'll actually share. So they'll regurgitate some of the blood so that their friend can also get blood for the night. And the idea behind that is that, like, you can't go 2 days without blood. So if you work together, then there's just a higher chance of everyone making it. Because maybe your friend will go out the next night and they'll get blood, but you won't. So they just come back and share blood with each other.
That's so precious.
So cute. So wholesome.
Oh, they're so sweet.
That's a really cool bat fact. I'm really excited about that bat fact.
Yay. I'm glad I could satisfy her.
Okay, next question. Is there any merit to the phrase blind as a bat? Because I know they navigate with echolocation. Yeah, like why do we say blind as a bat?
So their vision definitely isn't the best ever. I mean, if you're going to be out and about at night, you got to find some form to adapt, mm-hmm. right? So there's some animals that have adapted by having pretty fantastic night vision, and they're just good to go. And some increase their other senses, like hearing and smell. And for bats, they got echolocation. So yeah, you've got it right. They do navigate with their calls, which is really interesting. So when they're in any form of environment, they'll call, so very high frequency pitches that we just can't hear, and they'll adjust those calls depending on their environment. So they'll increase the length of the call if they're somewhere that's really open, because they need to like call and then have it come back to them to see how far away things are. If they're in forested areas, they'll have shorter calls. They'll do that more frequently. So short little calls that are constantly coming back so they can navigate around. So yeah, entirely, bats definitely echolocate. They definitely use it to get around, but not all of them do. So some bats, like the flying fox, they're fruit bats. So they don't really need to call to find their fruit, right? Because mm-hmm. it kind of chills there. So they don't have echolocation. They just use vision. But for the most part, yes, bats definitely echolocate. And their vision is pretty poopy, that's for sure.
All right. What is the biggest bat and what is the smallest bat? And what can you tell us about how they are related?
That's a good segue, because we were just talking about the flying fox.
We were. So we've hit that one. The biggest bat is the flying fox. Fun facts about those ones is they can live in, and they're huge, so this is a little weird to see. They can live in colonies of up to 200,000. So that's the number we were trying to throw around earlier. It's a little weird that the big bat is the ones that live in those gigantic colonies. And it's also kind of weird because, like, they eat fruit. So 200,000 bats are going out competing with one another for fruit. It's crazy.
That's a lot of fruit.
But yeah, it's tons of fruit. It's tons of bats. Probably tons of guano. Like, I can't imagine being under that roost. That'd be nasty.
You don't want to work in agriculture anywhere near one of those colonies.
Goodness, you don't, for sure.
Gives me an idea for a D&D campaign, though.
Ooh.
Oh, that'd be good. That would be fitting.
I gotta admit, like, I love bats, but that would be freaky to see that many, like, ginormous flying mammals.
I completely agree with you. Like, I went into my research and was like, bats are fun, bats are cute, bats are great. And then I started learning about them. I'm like, you know what? I kind of see how people are freaked out by these guys.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the biggest bat, the flying fruit, or flying fox. And then the littlest one, I forget its scientific name, but its little nickname is the bumblebee bat.
Oh!
Because it is, like, I think it's 3 centimeters long? Teeny!
Oh my God.
So it just, like, just this tiny, like, the size of your thumb, really. Like, in the palm of your hand. They're tiny little guys. They actually live in caves of, like, up to, I think, 100. So, I don't know, like a bowl full of bats or whatever, because they're so little, they're teeny, and they're insectivorous, so they eat insects, they echolocate, but yeah, that's the funnest difference, because they're teensy tiny.
The insects they eat must be the same size as them, that's so cute.
Oh, you know what, I never even considered that. I was just like, yeah, they eat insects. Like, what insects do they eat, those little guys? I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, like if they're eating wasps or bees, then they must be putting up quite the fight.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I have no idea what they eat, but that's cool to think about.
Okay.
Where are those little guys located?
Ooh, I don't know. Oh my goodness, I have no idea where they live. If I had to take a guess, and I'm sure this is like a Google click away for sure, but I'm going to guess it's somewhere tropical. Since they have such teeny body sizes, they would need to be somewhere warm so they don't lose all of that heat. Chelsea, are you doing a Google?
I did a Google, and I found out that you're correct, and they are in western Thailand and southeast Myanmar.
Okay. Okay. That makes sense. But I did, yeah, I had no idea.
They're kind of ugly, too. I'll post a picture of them. What is your favorite bat? Or what kind of bat are you the most batty about?
Hey. I feel like I should say something like the little brown bat because they're the ones I worked with a whole bunch, but I think it's the flying fox. That one's been getting a lot of attention today, and it's for good reason. They're a cool bat. And
they are.
Honestly, their faces are really cute. They're like little puppies. That's such a non-scientific reason, but yeah, totally. I think that flying foxes are just fascinating and cute as heck.
They're really cute. I'm posting a picture of them too.
How does something like, yeah, like that big and like supposedly heavy, like carry itself in the air? And like, what is the deal with flying foxes?
They just don't care. They're all like, this doesn't make sense. Whatever. We're just gonna go.
It's like the bumblebee.
yeah.
Like beginning of the bee movie.
According
just, like,
to all
no
laws
logical
of aviation.
So, I guess this is moving on to our last question here, and good, because we're sort of wrapping up on time here. But living in the city, what can we do to help our bat friends?
The cheesiest answer is education. So, like, learn about bats, which you guys are doing, and which I think this is great for. But another thing you can do is bat boxes, or bat houses, which you guys were also talking about. So one thing about that is, like, it gives them a nice little home to live in, which is fantastic. It could give them a place to roost and have, like, a little maternity colony. And a lot of the places the bats live, it's just, they're being torn down. Old trees, which are good for bats, those get torn down when they're found in buildings, which is really, really common. I'm pretty sure the last place I lived, there were bats living in one of my neighbor's houses. Really common. So if you find bats in your house or know that they're somewhere like that, it'd be better to call someone that can relocate them as opposed to pest control, because people really definitely, they treat them like pests, right? And they just kind of try and eradicate them. but the best way would be relocation and having good homes for them. Bats are actually facing their own pandemic right now, which is white nose syndrome. And that actually wound up spreading due to cavers coming from Europe and spreading that to places in America. So we've kind of been leading to like this little bat pandemic as well. So if we can start doing conservation for them and protecting them a little bit more, giving them good roosts, then I think that is the most that someone can do in their own backyard to try and help bats.
Well, I'll be getting a bat box for sure.
Yeah, right? And they might not use it, and sorry if they don't, but it's a good thought, right? It's, like, because it might help.
Yeah, I think they'll use it.
Yeah.
All right, well, that was all of our questions for you today, so now you say...
And that's another one for the archives.
Yay! Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Arcana Archives, an exploration into nerddom.
If you have any questions or suggestions for future topics or guests, please reach out to us at arcanacollective.archives@gmail.com.
Or follow us on Facebook or Instagram with the username @arcanaarchives.
Hope to see you again!